Hi, I'm Christy Uden, CEO at the Board of Certified Safety Professionals. When you think of a safety professional, what comes to mind? Maybe someone holding a clipboard, telling their coworkers what they're doing wrong? That image is common, but narrowly characterizes the fundamental role of a safety professional. Safety professionals play a critical role in the company's culture, making it a place where people want to work. They help us see the impact of the safe workplace and think of safety as something we want, not just something we need. Join me as we take a dive into the many facets of what safety professionals really do and the impact they have for their organizations. This is Safety on Location.
Well, welcome back to a dazzling episode of Safety on Location. A little bit of foreshadowing there. Now, you might notice that I don't sound like our usual host, and that's because I'm Joel Burgi, the Digital Media Manager here at BCSP. And as always, we're joined by BCSP CEO Christy Uden. Christy, hello.
Hi, Joel.
Well, we've got something pretty special today. Now, when you think of workplace safety, a jewelry design house probably isn't the first thing that comes to mind. But that's exactly why we wanted to take a closer look. Now, most of you have probably heard of the name Tiffany & Company, as it's fairly synonymous with fine jewelry and craftsmanship. But what does safety look like inside a company that works with high-value materials, intricate tools, and a unique set of workplace hazards? Well, to find out, we visited their facility in Lexington, Kentucky, where we got an inside look at how they approach safety in such a specialized industry.
Right, Joel. What really stood out to me was just how much of a team effort safety is at Tiffany & Company. Sure, they have dedicated environmental health and safety professionals, but what's really impressive is how employees at all levels are stepping up as part of the volunteer safety team and that collaborative culture that has made safety a priority.
Exactly. And in this episode, we'll be hearing from several members of their safety team, starting with Ronay Rogers, the Environmental Health and Safety Manager. Let's take a brilliant look at how Tiffany & Company keeps safety shining bright.
My name is Ronay Rogers, and I'm the Environmental Health and Safety Manager for Tiffany & Company. My responsibilities include the Lexington Manufacturing Facility, the Pelham Manufacturing and Diamond Division, as well as the Jewelry Design Innovation Workshop in Manhattan. Here at the Lexington Manufacturing Facility, we do a lot of repeatable jewelry. So we do a lot of the Love and Engagement series. We have lots of products that come throughout this facility. So currently we have about 162 or so employees here at the Lexington facility, including our craft side. Majority of that is craft. There's a few people in the office staff. We are currently celebrating a lot of safety milestones here, including being over 3 years without a lost time injury. And this week, we are also celebrating that we received the Kentucky Governor's Health and Safety Award.
So when you came here, you know, what was the biggest challenge you found?
The biggest challenge I found was probably the basics. We tried safety glasses, your normal safety glasses, and I went to my safety committee and they're like, well, people don't wear them because they're not comfortable. They're not this. They don't see the use in them. And so when we went through the safety committee, I found a company that you can get stylish glasses.
Yours?
Yes.
Those are really cute.
So they come in different colors, different styles. So I allowed everybody to pick out what style and color that they wanted, and it took off from there. So people like wearing them. It made a difference because when people were able to do a little personalization to it, they wanted to wear them more.
Yeah.
Personalizing PPE with fun designs is a great way to get employees engaged in safety. But at Tiffany & Company, there's a concerted focus on ergonomics, especially preventing musculoskeletal disorders. These injuries affect everything from nerves and tendons to joints and spinal discs. And in the jewelry industry, conditions like carpal tunnel syndrome are a big concern.
What are you assessing there to make sure that this is a safe environment?
So what I do in this particular area is I'm mainly looking at their ergonomics, and then I'm also looking at, are their chemicals labeled? Do they have their chemicals in the proper spot so that they're not in the line of fire of the flames, making sure those areas are clear?
Is carpal tunnel something that you have to think about when you're in this line of business? Or?
Yeah, it's something that I would think that you would need to think about. We fortunately haven't had anyone with issues because we are on top of a lot of our ergonomics. Historically at this site, ergonomics was our number one injury that occurred, but we've worked a lot on that. We've developed an ergonomics team. So they've been trained as ergonomic assessors. So we have a team of about 12 people, and that assessment is a full body assessment. So we look at their posture, the frequency. We look at those type of things, but most of the time it's things that are very simple that you can do to make a difference. For instance, this is a little clip. Some people use them because they feel more comfortable with them. Some people don't. But when they're using their hand tools, if you're holding that, it's not very heavy, but if you're holding it for 8 hours a day, it becomes a little bit more weight. So just taking your cord and putting it through something as simple as this, you know, not an expensive fix, something very simple, can make a huge difference on how that feels at the end of the day. Once you adjust the posture and you get people in the proper alignment for posture, that's the first step for the ergonomic assessment. We get them in their chair. We get them comfortable in their chair, and then we can adjust these things to fit the person. All of these pins and everything are made to where we can adjust them. And if he wanted that slightly higher, he can adjust all of that. Those are some of the things that we can do for ergonomics to make it easier on people to work properly and stay in the proper posture. So, and the microscopes are really good too, because they have a lot of adjustments that you can make to those for ergonomics, to where they can bring the microscope to them so they can keep that proper alignment. So they're not doing more than a 30%, you know, more than a 30 degree angle like this way would be a hazard. If you're doing that for more than 2 hours a day, you're going to start feeling a little crick in your neck, right? So we've taught people to bring the microscopes to them. And as he's demonstrating here,
do you think you would have known all of that adjustments and what's right if there wasn't a safety professional helping?
No, thing? No, I've been doing this for 30 years. She's the first safety professional I've ever had in my work.
A simple adjustment can lead to a huge transformation. As we learn from Brad Brown, a craftsperson trainer here at Tiffany & Company, Brad has 30 years of experience in the jewelry industry, and yet it wasn't until working with Ron A., the first safety professional he's encountered in his career, that he discovered how a simple tweak in his posture could eliminate a persistent back issue.
Was it challenging to change the way you work when you started thinking about incorporating?
My posture. Like, yeah. When I started sitting upright, I'm like, my body doesn't like that. But now I'm used to it. So it was only a couple of days.
Yeah, amazing, isn't it? The difference.
And my back doesn't hurt when I go home. I've always had back issues.
That's awesome. Yeah.
See, and you ask why I'm in safety and why I like safety so much is because things like that.
Yeah, it makes a huge difference.
What he's saying right now is he goes home without any back issues. He's had it for 30 years, and all of a sudden we change one little thing. We change the adjustment to his chair, and now he goes home pain-free.
At the start of our interview, I asked Ronnie about the biggest challenge she's faced since joining Tiffany & Company. As we heard from Brad, she's the first safety professional he's worked with prior to joining the team here at Tiffany, so I wanted to learn more about the development of the safety culture since Ronnie joined the team. I asked her about this, and she began to describe the process of avoiding pinch grips and the filtration system they use to remove harmful compounds from the air.
Is this the polishing?
Yeah, this is still polishing department, and so, like, in that, she's made her a tool to hold that so she's not holding it in her fingers doing a pinch grip. So having tools to hold things in rather than pinching your fingers, you know, you don't really want a pinch grip, you know? So it takes that pressure off of her fingers.
Are there chemicals involved in the polishing as well?
So there are compounds that they use to polish with. And so that's why we have the dust collector to pull all of that away from the employees. And you were asking about this. This is actually a couple of things. It can protect their eyes from anything coming out at them, but also it helps divert that air into that dust collecting.
Was it difficult changing the culture when you came in?
It wasn't really difficult as much as it was a slow going process, because I can't come into somewhere and just make changes all at once. You know, you want to gradually make those changes. and make a difference that way.
Much like transforming a company's safety culture is a gradual process, gaining employee buy-in for new practices can take time. As Lucas Eisen, the lead craftsperson trainer, explains, correcting workers' posture is no exception. While these adjustments may not always be well received, as we learned with Brad, even a minor change in posture can resolve an issue that has persisted for decades.
What's, like, for you, like, the biggest challenge you face when you're thinking about, like, safety or posture? What's the most difficult thing that you have to remember?
Posture is, you just have to get used to it. When they get set up with people on ergo, they think they're being hurt because of their posture, but really they're working muscles they've never worked before because they're in the correct posture. So you kind of have to work through that and be like, no, give it a week. And then all of a sudden they're like, hey, I don't hurt anymore. And you're like, well, there you go. You have to work your muscles. I'm working with somebody over there now with that exact same thing.
So Lucas is also on our ergonomics team. So,
he does
some of the assessments for us as well. So he sets up most people's microscopes, or he did, still does a lot of the microscopes. And are you still on the MERT team as well?
Yeah.
So MERT team as well, the medical emergency response team. So very active in all the safety world.
Have you seen a lot of advancements in the last, 20 plus years?
Yeah, it's extremely safe. It's extremely safe.
Lucas' remarks about Tiffany's being a safer work environment got me excited to talk to Bob Alley, the vice president of jewelry manufacturing. Bob has learned a lot over the course of his 30 years in manufacturing, and he's taken lessons from each of those past roles at Tiffany's to shape a culture where safety and efficiency go hand in hand. His leadership balances sharp business acumen with genuine care for his team, understanding that a safe worker isn't just looking out for themselves, but also strengthening the entire business.
My name is Bob Alley. I'm the Vice President of Jewelry Manufacturing and Strategic Sourcing for North America for Tiffany.
And how long have you been at Tiffany's?
I've been here almost close to 5 years now. And I actually started my career here in Lexington, but in the last 2 years, I moved to our sister facility in Cumberland, Rhode Island.
And so what is your role as the VP? What does that entail?
So I already mentioned our two facilities. We have one here in Lexington. We have one in Cumberland, Rhode Island. We have one in Pelham, New York, and another facility in the Dominican Republic. So responsibility-wise, primarily the safety of the people that work in those facilities. We have about 1,400 craft, in total across those four facilities. So, the responsibilities are, their safety, and then obviously the production that comes out of that. So we do anything from, stamping and casting of metal all the way up to more traditional jewelry work, jewelers, setters, and polishers, and a variety of different things across those facilities. But a lot of different techniques and styles of jewelry making.
Have you seen a lot change in the last few years that you've been here?
Tiffany itself is obviously a very American iconic brand that has been around for a long period of time. So, coming out of that type of industry, it hasn't always been the most operationally focused compared to automotive or pharmaceuticals or food or those types of things. What I've seen kind of really happen is, a more attention to detail on more operationally focused initiatives and strategies, which obviously includes the safety of the craft. So, we've got to protect our people that are actually, making the product, whether that be a machine with the guarding that needs to be in place, make sure nobody's getting hurt, or ergonomic concerns of a jeweler sitting at a bench and, looking at a piece of jewelry, utilizing their shoulders and arms to set a diamond, which, obviously is, you do that repetitively, there's potential for ergonomic concerns and other types of things to happen. So I guess, I've seen that transformation happen as well. And then along the way, LVMH, Louis Vuitton, actually acquired us about 3 years ago. So it's a more of a European, but it's very interesting for Tiffany because it is expanding our reach globally. So we are pushing what we know from the United States into other facilities in Europe, and they're learning a lot from the practices that we've developed. So it's a very challenging, dynamic, parts of the organization are more mature than other parts of the organization, but it's all about continuous improvement and learning and productivity. So obviously people play a huge part of that.
With this expansion and, you know, there's different regulations, different countries. Is there anything in particular that you found most challenging in your role and integrating that?
I wouldn't say there's been any roadblocks or barriers from a cultural standpoint. Everybody believes in it. It's more about the time and the dedication it takes to get there. So we all want to, you know, we want to have reduced injury rates and we want to have less lost time accidents, but the capital is required to do a lot of, you know, facilities that don't have a lot of guarding and those types of things around it. You got to do the capital justification, and then you got to move that forward for putting these, you know, these programs and processes that we've got here in Kentucky, which have led to a lot of great results, duplicating that in an even bigger facility or a facility that's, you know, geographically diverse like Europe. It's just the challenge of time more than anything else. I know as an organization, we're going to get there. It's just continuing to improve every day and sharing our best practice.
When we're talking about like just quality, I was wondering if you could also give me some more insight on, you know, basically that connection between safety and the quality, because yeah, when you think of Tiffany, you think yeah, of quality, right?
Sure, absolutely. So, you know, I'm at this point in my career, I've got 30 plus years of manufacturing experience. And so, you know, you bring things to your job that you learned other places, but the main metrics are always, you know, safety, quality, delivery, cost, and people. And safety being the first one you always mention is the fact that, you know, I think if your workforce isn't safe, you end up losing, you know, people can't make the product like you'd design it to, or if they're tired, especially in the jewelry industry, if you work, you know, past an 8-hour shift or 40 hours a week, your body doesn't recover and repair itself. So then you naturally don't set a diamond as, you know, crisp and clean as it needs to be, or you don't polish something like it needs to be. So there's that in our industry, it's probably a closer tie than most, because it's all about your ability to stay fresh and ready to go and to and make the jewelry, which ends up making, we do 100% inspection on every piece that we make. So every single piece that's made goes in for inspection. So, you know, it's a very close tie between what comes off the floor and what, you know, what you're able to do on the floor and then what's actually judged in our quality department. So it's extremely important.
Have you found there like any certain techniques that you found really helpful in applying when you're talking about like getting tired and things like that with employees? Are there certain things you've implemented that you thought really worked well?
Yeah, we're lucky here in Kentucky that we've got our EHS manager has actually brought a lot of experience here as well. So we've done things in the past like Ermagnon trainings and those types of things that helped us on a daily basis, but we've done a lot more things about stretching breaks. So twice a day we'll actually stop and actively stretch at our bench, which helps a lot. I mean, just taking that extra 5 to 10 minutes to actually flex the muscles that you're using a lot every day makes sense. Sitting at a jeweler bench all day and hunching over into the microscope, if you even stand up and straighten your body up and pull your shoulders back, those types of things. And then just the sophistication of our processes. So we're much more now, you know, cognizant of the chemicals that we use, the programs to ensure that we're only bringing in things that are compliant or even sustainable to the environment, those types of things. Make sure our wastewater permits and all those types of things are in place. So I think it's just been, you know, there's things that we learn and things that it's just a matter of evolution, though, because I think it's bringing some experience to a facility that has craft that know how to make it and combining those forces together to really put the best processes in place to ensure, you know, the best output for your, you know, people or the product that you're making. And that's what's happened here in Lexington. So it's been very, the management staff has done, I can't say enough about their commitment, their willingness to work together. It's, you know, things you do on a daily basis, then turn into a weekly basis, monthly basis, and an annual basis. And every one of those steps along the way, you have KPIs and measurements that you use. But at the end of the day, there's always the opportunity for somebody to get hurt. And you can't guarantee that you do these things and you're going to have 100%, you know, or, you know, no injuries or no lost times. But it gives you the best chance possible to minimize the injuries and then learn from things that have happened in the past. And so I think that's, you know, those, you know, processes and things that we put in place are the things that I've carried over and I'm proud of Lexington.
Whitney Hannon, a level 3 jeweler, an active member of the ergonomics and MERT teams, has seen firsthand how leveraging well-known games can make safety training more effective, turning essential lessons into memorable, interactive experiences.
My name is Whitney Hannon. I'm a jeweler here at Tiffany & Company.
And can you tell me what your job duties entail?
Well, it's an exciting job every day. Essentially, I navigate my way through precious metals and gemstones using tools and the torch and flammable liquids.
Yeah. What does safety mean to you?
Well, it means a lot to me, really. I've been involved with safety since I've been here. I'm a member of the ergonomics team, a member of MERT, our medical emergency response team, and I was a member of the safety committee for 5 years. 4 years of that, I was the chair.
Wow. So what have you seen? What are some of the things that have been put in place that have helped evolve and turn the culture into what it is today?
Well, I mean, Rana has been invaluable. She brings a whole new level of knowledge that we didn't have before. You know, each member of the safety committee who's been a member in the past 2 years has a 10-hour OSHA certification for general industry. The ergonomics training came in. A company called Human Tech came in and did our training. We've got a full-fledged team now, you know. They know what to do, what to look for, you know, things like that.
What does it mean having somebody that's certified in safety?
For the company, it's been amazing to have her. We're all just evolving as we go. To have her on site, it's been amazing. You know, we keep breaking records. We can't really stop breaking records on site. It's been amazing for me to have her as a mentor. I mean, it's become so cool here that there's a lottery to get onto the safety committee.
At Tiffany & Company, stretching plays a vital role in ergonomic safety practices, helping workers prevent strain and injury. But as Ronnie explains, true safety success goes beyond movement. It really takes a holistic approach that actively seeks employee involvement. By integrating staff into training programs, Tiffany & Company fosters a culture where safety isn't just taught, it's embraced.
You could share with us some of the things you've put in practice here at Tiffany's for how you train employees.
All right. So for training, I am a more interactive, hands-on kind of trainer. So I like to make things relatable to the people and make it fun by doing crazy things. Maybe it's a family feud style training to where people have to answer questions and a family feud games kind of thing. You know, there's Jeopardy, there's different things that you can use for that. But I also do a lot of demonstrations. So I like to do demos, for instance, you know, how to properly wash your hands by putting glow germ on people's hands and then have them go wash it, especially for the people that are on our MERT team. So that way that they know how to properly wear gloves, how to properly wear their hands. So it's more hands-on. I do a lot of out-of-the-box trainings. At this facility as well as other facilities, I do videos, kooky videos that kind of keeps people's mind on things. I make a fool out of myself to make people remember things.
So you're making, these are videos of you?
Some of them are. In my previous jobs, I've also done things like that as well, to where I still have people coming up to me years later and remember things from my training.
So do alarms go off when it's time to stretch? Is that what happens?
So at 10 and 2, there'll be a bell that sounds, and then it lets them know that it's time for stretching to come on, and there's a video. So I had people volunteer or be voluntold to do be parts of the video. So you'll see some of our employees, even our director, on the videos doing stretches, and including myself. And there is one stretch on there that I'll do, and occasionally the theme changes. There might be a penguin up there. There might be somebody that looks like they're on a Hawaiian island. So, but the employees are able to help pick the music for that. So it constantly changes, and it keeps it fresh and entertaining.
At BCSP, we often emphasize that a strong safety culture starts at the top. While every member of an organization has a responsibility for safety, true cultural change depends on the leadership's commitment and support. We also hear that safety isn't just about policies and procedures. It's really about people. On our other podcast, My Big Safety Challenge, one reoccurring theme we often hear is that safety is built on relationships and genuinely understanding and connecting with the employees. Curious to hear her perspective, I asked Ronnie about this as she built upon the safety culture at Tiffany & Company.
Well, one thing I noticed is, like, I just walking around, there does seem to be a really strong safety culture here. And so if you were giving somebody, a safety professional, you know, tips on what they could do to help build their culture, what do you think is one of the most important things you've been able to incorporate in that's made such a difference?
I think the one thing that makes a big difference here is getting the employees buy-in, but you have to have also your top management buy-in as well, because when you've got employees pushing it and you've got management pushing it, it meets in the middle and it seems like everybody buys into it when you've got both areas pushing in both directions for safety. I think too, getting to know the employees. I can tell you a lot about the employees out here, whether it's, you know, their kids, their grandkids, what, you know, getting and relating to those employees, making things personal, because safety is all, or in this position, no one reports to me directly. So it's all about influence management. So it's, you gotta make them want to do safety. You gotta make them see why it's important, and influence them, because I have no one reporting to me. So
yeah,
directly reporting, obviously. So,
do you have any tips, like when you've had anybody that maybe has been kind of hard headed towards adopting, you know, some change?
Sometimes when you have employees that might be a little more difficult and don't really want to adhere to safety, I think the one thing is to make it relatable to them and to make them see what could happen and how would that affect people in their family. So sometimes I'll start out my new hire training, but I'll have everybody close their eyes and I'll tell them, all right, today, let's think about this. If you didn't work safe and you didn't make it home today, how would that affect the people in your life? It's very effective. It's kind of a Debbie Downer, but then I bring it back up again with my safety spiel. So,
how about with upper management? Because I mean, that technique, the people that are doing the work and how to keep them safe, when you're thinking about it from the upper management level and getting that buy-in, is there anything, any advice you would give to somebody that's trying to get their management to buy in?
I think a lot of times with upper management, they think in terms of dollars and numbers. So I think finding statistics and finding cost of things, like what the cost of an injury would be for a particular situation that you're in. And then also for me, how I go about making my priorities and relaying that to upper management is I do a risk assessment and I have a risk register. And I also look at my loss tree analysis. So I'll look and see what is our biggest hitters, what is the biggest risk in our facilities, and then I'll put a plan together. So then I have numbers based on that risk register to back those things.
Do you have a typical day in safety?
No. A typical day in safety, it's always different. That's the one thing that I like about the safety profession is that your day, you could have it planned out in the beginning of the day to go one way, and it may be totally different from what you had planned. So it's always a different scenario for every day.
We've established that obtaining buy-in from management and the C-suite is crucial. But how do you make it happen? I turned to Rane for insight, asking how she successfully gained leadership's approval for her safety initiative.
When I first got here, there was a lost time injury about every 30 days. And it was mainly due to ergonomics. So it's a big change, like, because now the ergonomics is no longer that number one hitter. I can show you guys a graph and it's like amazing to see. I mean, it's a drastic reduction. It's crazy. But that's the kind of stuff when you were asking about management is giving them the data and showing them the results from the changes that we make. And that goes a long way and talking numbers. So,
right. Well,
but when I tried to sell the safety glasses for, I think they were like $39 or $34 a piece for these. And there's, you know, quite a few people out here. So it's not like a little chunk of change when they're compared to making, you know, paying like $2 a pair or so, if that, to that, was I looked up the data and said, okay, this is how much one eye injury would occur. And this is how much you would save if you had just one eye injury. So that kind of went a long way. So, because I have, like, there's no set, like, for me here in this location, no set, like, here's a safety budget for you, you know? It comes out of everybody else's operational expenses. Overall, this site has done really well at changing the culture in the past 5 years.
I'm always fascinated by the unique paths that people lead into the safety profession. Ronnie's journey is one we often hear. Someone with a different career plan who unexpectedly found their calling in safety. The sheer number of safety professionals with similar stories speaks volumes to the nature of this field. Many, drawn by its purpose and impact, willingly shift their careers and even their lives to pursue safety. And for a people person like Ronnie, it offers the invaluable opportunity to connect with people and make a real difference in their lives.
So I was just wondering if you could share with us how you got into safety.
I didn't originally start out in safety. My background is chemistry and biology. So I worked as an environmental chemist for the U.S. government in Germany for a little while and moved back to Kentucky and did monoclonal antibody research. And that's where both of those facilities, I learned a little bit more about safety. Really wasn't exposed to safety before that. Joined a safety committee and it kind of went from there. So I evolved into safety. Went back to school to get my master's in public health with an emphasis in environmental health and safety, just to make sure I knew what I should know, because I was self-taught up to that point. So yeah. Doing a lot of research up to that point. So.
What did you like about it?
You know, I think for me, although I love working with chemistry, a lot of times you're in a laboratory by yourself, and I'm a people person. And I think once I joined that safety committee, I was around people. I was able to help. I love to teach classes. Like, that's my favorite thing of all of the things in safety is to teach. So I think being a part of that safety committee, being exposed to it and learning more about it just made my love for it just grow even more. And I love being around people. And obviously, safety is all about influence management and being around people.
Right. And you're also credentialed.
Yes, I currently hold the ASP as well as the CSP. It's a great thing to have.
How did you find out about?
You know, I've known about it for a while. I kind of procrastinated on taking the exam for a while because I was afraid of taking a test. So after taking the ASP, I was like, oh, this isn't as bad as I thought it was going to be. And so then I studied though for it. And then I went back and studied some more and took the CSP and passed on the first try. So
awesome. Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
So in becoming credentialed, do you feel that's had an impact on your career?
I do think that it gives you more of that credibility. I think that people see it as, oh, she really knows safety. She's got the CSP. So I think it does help. I think it does. And it also, you know, getting that was also about continuously improving, you know. You always, with safety, things are always evolving. Things are always changing. So learning more things and making sure that I stay on top of my game with safety.
What do you do for continued professional development?
I do a lot of classes. I like to expand my knowledge. And sometimes in things that may not exactly be related to the job that I'm doing, you know, like refrigeration or this, something that's different, to always continuously learning new things. Because I've had different roles within safety, and I think there's a different emphasis in each company on what's the top hitter, if you will. Like here, it's ergonomics. Somewhere else, it might be lockout, tagout, or machine guarding. So I think always continually learn new things helps.
So what advice would you give to a young professional starting in their career?
I think one of the biggest advices that I could give to somebody new coming into safety is to go out on the floor, learn what they do. Here at this facility, learning how to do the craft, going out there through their training course, even though I'm not a jeweler, but learning how to actually set a diamond helped me better be able to prepare them and to be able to tell them ergonomic advancements. So I think go out onto the floor, learn the people, learn what they do, learn how the job functions work. Also, always be continuously learning. Never stop learning. And don't be afraid to fail.
Well, that wraps up our episode with Tiffany and Company. So, Christy, what stuck out with you the most?
I think hearing Ronnie talk about the basics is what stood out the most to me. We go into these places that have operations around the globe and talk to people who run really huge teams. Sometimes it's nice to be reminded that a lot of safety is centered around the basics, like correct posture, ensuring proper ergonomics, finding creative ways for employees to engage. These are the little things that can add up to a company having an amazing safety culture.
Was there anything that you heard or saw while we were on that visit that surprised you?
I think what struck me the most was how positively the jewelers and other employees spoke about Ronnie and the safety team. They truly appreciated the work she and her team are doing. They've bought in and noticed results, which makes it a lot easier to prevent injuries and send everyone home safe every day.
Well, that wraps up our time with Tiffany and Company, but stick around. More safety on location episodes are on the way. And if you're not subscribed, maybe consider hitting that subscribe button or share this episode with a friend. And be sure to follow us on social media to stay up to date on our latest episodes. We just want to thank Tiffany and Company for opening the doors and welcoming us in to kind of share their story of how they approach safety. And thanks to everyone for listening. And until next time, stay safe.
Safety on Location is a podcast from BCSP with your host, BCSP CEO Christy Uden, executive produced by Joel Burgai, edited by Jared Griot, and editorial support from Brandon Mohaupt. If you like this episode, subscribe to receive new episodes on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or other podcast platforms. Thanks for listening.